Well, for those who don't know me, my name is Anna Frick. I'm Swedish, so I know that I have a Swedish corner somewhere. Yes. And I'm working as a global marketing service director for AstraZeneca. AstraZeneca is a British-Swedish company, but I'm based in Gothenburg, but I work in Manchester, and my office is in Brussels. So I visit the three most rainiest cities in Europe on a regular basis, and now I took the rain with me. So you can blame it on me that it's raining out there. What we're going to do this afternoon is to talk through a little bit about all the different things going on in pharma. And I would like you to be able to walk out this door in an hour with an understanding of what is going on, why it's going on, what the complications or the consequences are for you, and what the future might be bringing. And it's a bit up to you guys now to ask questions along the way so you get maximum benefit out of this session. Okay? So I'm giving a bit of responsibility back to you. But before I do that, every time I have a chance to meet people like yourselves, I always take the opportunity to present IPCA, because I'm the president of IPCA for one more year. Does anyone here know about IPCA? And I expect you, Bruno, to raise your hand. Yes. Good. There's a few anyway in the room. I'm going to take short start to just go through what IPCA is. So what we're going to do is short introduction to IPCA, so you know what it is. I'm going to talk about what is really going on and what's happening. Then you will see what the reactions have been from pharma, and then we're going to talk about the future, and of course, what does it really mean for you guys. But IPCA. IPCA is short for International Pharmaceutical Congress Advisory Association. Congress and advisory are keywords in this association. This association is approximately 20 years old. We celebrated it in Vienna the other year. And the reason for actually starting IPCA was because we saw a lot of what we call mushrooming of events. You know, you have an area that is quite interesting, and suddenly you have meetings popping up, like the First International, First National, etc., etc., etc. And everyone kept coming to the industry to ask for support and money. And we also felt that they were all going in all sorts of directions. And we just felt that we wanted to have a bit of order here, what was going on. So we actually formed this group. And it started off with only a few members of the big companies. And some of these companies does not even exist any longer because we have merged quite a lot. So what we do is that we are actually looking at what are the standards for medical congresses that we think is important. We look at also, of course, what is the benefit for all stakeholders involved in delivering medical congresses. So it's not just our perspective. We spend an awful lot of time, of course, to communicate with one another and share ideas and data and experiences. And you will see later on that we've formed in task forces to be able to communicate with you guys better on what's going on. We have training and courses for our members. A lot of these courses are around compliance, of course. We had recently a course where some of the medical associations was part of this training. Bruno, you were there, where we went through the compliance training and sort of shared the complexity of compliance. And then, of course, we have something that we call code of conduct and guidelines issues that we write out on a regular basis. The people that can actually be part of IPCA is international active pharmaceutical companies that research. And that is important. So there's no generic companies involved here. It is the research-based companies. And we have this code of conduct that people must sign up to. That is the sort of lowest common denominator that we have agreed upon. Here are some of the members, and you can see that all the major pharmas are here. and they are involved. We used to be much, much bigger, more members. But since companies keep merging, we are getting fewer, but it's the same people around. Okay, code of conduct. Here are the sort of basic statements on healthcare issues. And what you can see there is that on our website, and you will get that website in a minute, you will find this code of conduct. And that will give you a sort of feeling for what we're after and what we're working with. It's not rocket science. I must say that most meetings are today delivering to that standard. When we started 20 years ago, that was not the case, but definitely today it's not a problem. We work a lot, as I said, with compliance. And as you will see later on, when we talk about the compliance issue, it's a moving target. So it's a lot about talking and dissemination of information amongst our members to keep them up to date on everything that is going on. Then we also interact a lot with the rest of the meeting industry, such as medical associations, such as PCOs, such as convention bureaus, etc., etc., etc. So we try to work closely together and not in isolation. Our main delivery is really through the therapeutic task forces. That's usually, if you are a representing an association, that's usually how you will meet us. That's where the industry comes together and speaks with one voice, and you will be presenting your congress or any issues that you might be having. That is also your point of contact if you have any questions. So if you're being approached by a big association that wants to have a meeting, and you are questioning maybe compliance, or you're wondering if the venue is appropriate, and you want to talk to the industry, here's your point of contact. That's one you can contact. As I said, we talked about the workshops and sessions and things like that. We will be talking about CME in a minute, and we're going to spend a lot of time on compliance, so you will get that for sure. And as I said, we have actually a tool on our website that is only open, unfortunately, for our members, where we have an updated list on every compliance rule there is for every specific country. So that's also a good thing to be aware of, that you can turn to us and we can help you, guide you through. We also have the point of contact into these different organizations to find out if there's any queries. We have this membership website, www.ifca.org. And I think that there you can actually go in, have a look. You will find lots of useful information. You will also see who the point of contact is for each specific company. So you can actually start getting your way through. If you have any questions, you can always ask for me through this website, and I will come back to you guys. We have a newsletter. Newsletter, very easy to quickly get updated on what's going on. If you go into the website, you can register for the newsletter, and you can easily follow what's going on in our business. I think I'm going to jump this, actually, because I think we talked about this. Let's talk a little bit about what's really going on in pharma. What is happening? Pharma has sort of been there forever. It's stable, nothing has happened, we deliver, quite conservative a bit, doesn't really change. And suddenly, boom, everything changes overnight. And it's not due, and that is important to point out, this has nothing to do with the recession. Nothing. Because we have a completely different issues in our hands. And this is the reason why you see the shift. We are facing a lot of patent expiry right now. All the big mega brands, as we call them, are going off patent, or they have already done it. For instance, in my company, our biggest drug is called Nexium. It's a $6 billion US dollar drug. It's on its way out. And generics, when they enter the market, takes approximately 2 months to gain 80% of that market. Wiped out. Okay?
With all the research.
With all the research. Off it goes. Pipeline. Sorry? Still have the name, but it's not worth anything. Nope. Nope, it doesn't work that way. And you will soon see why. Because there's a lot of driving forces behind to actually push over to generics, which I will share with you in a minute. We have had pipelines issues as well. Research is expensive. And lately, all industry has had tightened rules, which is good. FDA is getting more demanding. Which is not a bad thing, because it's at the end of the day, it's about protecting us as patients. But we have had problems to deliver good medicines in the past. And one of the reasons is because it's expensive to conduct research, and therefore we usually conduct very at later stages. We stick with one molecule. In the past, we would actually use maybe 5-10 for a long time into research phase. That is too expensive to do now. And with the pressure that we have from our stakeholders, that is not a way forward. So you have probably read in the paper there has been a lot of products that has failed very late, usually in stage 3, where it's out and it's being researched on patients, and then it's sort of not delivering, and then we have to withdraw it. So it's getting harder, absolutely. On top of that, we have a very bad reputation. A reputation that we probably have earned. I have been in the industry for 25 years. I do remember the golden days. It was fun. It was good. So I'm part of the problem, but we're now trying to fix it. And I will later on just share with you, you can see what it has been like. But all of us have seen movies or read books about the bad pharma industry, who's always the crook, someone behind that wants to earn a lot of money on sick people. And that is not what we're all about. We are not about that. We're not about whining and dining. We are actually about research. We are about finding cures for patients. We are about to help patients to a better life. And I think that we have not been very good at telling that story. And Bruno, because you're in the room, just looking back at breast cancer, for instance, and what has happened in that treatment regime in 10 years, is fantastic. And that is based on the research that has been conducted by the pharma industry. So we need to get better and start talking about these sort of things. And then, of course, we have pressure from the financial market. Financial market works in quarterly reports. To develop a drug takes 10 years. So you can see the mismatch here. Yes? The patent life that we have is, patent is the thing that can protect us. And we talked a little bit about this when we had the Meet the Expert this morning, when we sat down and discussed. We patent protect the minute that we have a molecule. That's the minute. I mean, when we have something that we think this is good, we have 17 years going from that day. 10 years to develop the drug, and then. So it's not that much time that we have. So to launch a product, it's 6 months to get it right. Otherwise, you're gone. So it's a tough one. It's a tough one. But then we, of course, get patent protection on techniques and how we actually produce it and things like that. These are weaker patents than the actual molecule protection. But it's important to get that patent protection early on, because we want to be able to have our peers talk to their peers and discuss it, because that's how you research, that's how you develop things. So here's one of the all the problems that we are facing. However, on top of that, we have a lot of things happening in our external world. And there is a growing concern from the societies, because we are all taxpayers, we're all paying for the care of our populations and all the treatments that people need. And we all know that we're going to have an older population, and it's growing fast. Aging populations need more care. They need more treatment, and that is costly. So that is one problem that the society has. We have a larger population, and larger population is not that we are more people, but we're bigger, we're fatter. And by being large, we also have a lot of additional problems. Right now we see diseases on teenage kids that usually in the past started when they were 75, 70, around 80, and that is diabetes type 2. This is only due to that they are fat. So we have a huge problem ahead of us. And how that is going to be solved, don't really know. But it's a bomb and it's ticking. Then I think that we're talking more about also prevention rather than treatment. So what can we actually do to ensure that people don't end up being sick? How can we actually get people to look after themselves in a way that they don't end up in this treatment pool? And a lot of people are expecting that as well. They want to have that. I certainly would like to have that. But all in all, this means that we will have an increased cost pressure on taxpayers, you and me. And if you are from Sweden, it's an enormous pressure that we have. And as you know, then the economical environment is not helping us at all. So the reaction to this is that the reimbursement system that we have in the majority of countries are getting tougher. You have seen probably that a lot of prescription drugs are now available OTC, which means that they want the patients, us, to actually pay for our own drugs as much as we can. And this usually has to do with lifestyle treatment, so you have to sort of take care of your own problems. Then what is new is, of course, that the society is supporting the introduction of generics, and with the price structure, they will push the doctors to go over to generics faster than they did in the past. So that's one of the reasons that the name doesn't really matter. Because when I come with a prescription to my pharmacist, for instance with Nexium, and there's generic, the pharmacist will switch it, and he's obliged to switch it. So that's the difference right now. So we need to really ensure that we do things right in the beginning. And as you will see, this is a regulated political and legislative environment that we are working in. And we have our eyes on us for sure. Okay? Any questions on the environmental and the environment that we are operating in? Let me then share with you what we have done. In the educational programs, there's a lot of these activities going on, how to actually avoid getting, in our case it's more to get sicker than to get sick, which is educational program that we provide for the doctors or the nurses to give to their patients. The problem is that if you're not sick, you're probably not really interested. I think that's a key problem. I mean, we have all these campaigns in all our different countries about stop smoking and things like that. And it doesn't really, really work. Yes? Vaccines is definitely an area that is growing. That is prophylactic, of course, absolutely. That's a big area, and more diseases we can actually develop vaccines for. So that is coming. Yep. So what we have done in reaction to this, guys, is that we have said we can sort this issue out. We can take on ourselves to put down some regulations that we all are going to follow. And this is one of the first time, anyway, in my 25-year life in pharma, that everyone is behind it. So compliance is due to, this actually started off with a series of things going on. 2003, this article appeared in BMJ, and you can see the pigs sitting here and eating, they're golfing, they're flying, having a really good time on the expense of the pharma industry. This one kicked off a huge debate. And we started seeing a lot of different articles in all sorts of ways. Since I want to be nice to my colleagues in other areas, I have taken just a few examples from AstraZeneca. Here are my colleagues at AstraZeneca who said a questioning and a hearing by FDA. This became serious. Martin, you had a question. British Medical Journal, which is one of the biggest journals that all doctors, if you want to be something, that's what you read. We had meetings like this. Is anyone here from Switzerland? Hi. Then we're going to talk about Davos. This is a very good meeting in Davos. It was a very good meeting at Davos. You know, where you had it was so that you started in the morning, you had scientific sessions, you had lunch, went out skiing for 4 hours, went back and had a scientific session. That was a format that was accepted. Davos, as a ski resort, and I know that it's not a ski resort in Switzerland, was perceived as an issue. And this was brought as an example that we don't want to see this kind of activities any longer. So the bad reputation is, of course, we needed to take on something on ourselves. We made the rules. Yes? The profit is going back into research. Not all of it, because we have all the... I mean, what we pay for is, of course, is the research.
But I think in general, it's also the profit should be looked at.
Mm. Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. What you see going on right now is that the profit, and then we come back to that, everything is being shifted into pipelines. Research, research, research. We put 25-30% of our profit into that. The rest is going to keep the people in up and going and running. We are now actually cutting down on people as a consequence of getting more money into research. So the profit-making machine that was in the past is no longer true.
It's much more important.
Meetings, which is an interesting one, is actually our biggest single spend. Mm-hmm. So if you look at all our activities, meeting is by far the biggest spend. But we'll come back to that, because if you look at all the components going into meetings, it's quite a lot of different things. These self-regulatory rules, you will find at IFPMA code. This is actually where you can... This is the overall global rule. If you don't look at anything else, this is the document to look at, because everyone around the globe needs to follow this code. That's the minimum. That is not the most updated version up there. That's very well spotted, because the latest one is 2009. This is 2006. So if you go in there, you can actually look at this pharma code and you can have a look at it. Yeah? This code applies to every interaction with external stakeholders. So any doctor in any situation, patients, press, everyone is actually part of this code. And this is not just the meetings per se. This is about how the reps should visit. It is a section on investigator and investigative meeting. It's a section on how to conduct clinical trials. So it sort of covers more or less everything. But this is just the umbrella compliance, because then it sort of drills down to a European version, an Asian version. Then on top of that, you will have country-wise versions. And then on top of that, you will have company versions. And I will soon show you how complex this is. And this is just to point out that this is self-regulatory. Then, of course, there is, in addition to that, there are laws that is actually not, is legal, that you can go into jail for. Bribing is definitely one of those. So bear that in mind. There are legal activities as well. So, to your question then, let's pretend I'm going to have a meeting in country X. Since I'm at the international department, I'm inviting A, B, C, and D, and E to this meeting. What do I need to look for? So what I look for is the global standards. IFPMA, FP, PMA is the European version. That's my sort of umbrella. That's where I start. Then the story continues. Then I have to look at each individual country that I'm inviting. And foremost, of course, the host country where I'm going to be at. Because that is really important that I don't go there and screw up as an international one. Because they are the ones who will go to jail, not me. But we don't go to jail, but they will get a fine. Then I have my internal codes, and living in AstraZeneca and as many other countries, or the companies, we have different codes depending on where we're at. So I need to go back and check maybe with France compared to Sweden, compared to etc., etc. And what I do is that I take the lowest common denominator, trying to identify which rule I'm going to stick with. Then IFPMA has a very strange rule, and that is that I have always to follow the rule from where my headquarters is based. And in my case, I could pick. I could be either Sweden or I could be UK. And these are the two toughest codes in Europe. So we pick the UK code, which is not that much different, which is very, very stringent. But the problem for you guys will be that if you're having a meeting where you have AstraZeneca, Novartis, Novo Nordisk, for instance, we are all actually following different codes. And that can be a huge issue for you guys. We have, as IPCA, talked and discussed with IFPMA to find if we can have one code for international meetings just to make life much, much, much easier. And we're all sort of singing from the same hymn sheet because this is not where we're going to compete, but that we have different codes. And it's just making life complicated. All of this, of course, I have to say that, all of this has to be signed off on all different levels. There's legal people involved. This can take 2 months to get through the company. So it's a long planning process, which in the past could go like this. I could just say, yes, we're going, or we're doing that. No, 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 no. This takes long.
Are you talking what kind of meeting of association?
All meetings. Corporate? All meetings. No, not corporate. Corporate, I'm not signing off. Every time I have to do with external stakeholders.
Okay.
Patients, press, doctors,
all
nurses. Yep. Everything has to be signed off. When I do my internal, I don't have to sign it off. But we try to treat our internal the same way as we treat our external people. So, as I then said, I mean, this is actually the rules are then looking at venues, it's looking at hospitalities, social events. I don't even know why it's up there, to be honest, guys, because we don't do social events any longer. That's gone. We feed them so that they stay alive. But there's no entertainment whatsoever. I think that in IFPMA it says like entertainment, yes, it can be allowed if it's CD music. No live entertainment. CD. Put on a CD record so you can have some music in the. And this is changing. That's also the beauty. It's changing by the minute. I just learned that there's new rules in Greece that just came out the other day. So trying to keep on top of this, it's quite a challenge. But I'm going to teach you quickly compliance. Easy. Venue. No resort hotel. No spas, no golfs, no touristic place. What is a touristic place? Malaga? Yes. Is Davos a touristic place? You say yes? A lot of your Swiss colleagues would definitely say no. Yeah?
What makes Malaga a touristic destination versus somewhere else? I mean, what makes Malaga more of a touristic destination?
Very good question. I think that the definition of what a touristic place is, what we have said, if it is a ski resort or a sun resort, you know, where you go for bathing, that is ruled out no matter what season it is. But then you have the little ones that are not that easy. So, for instance, a venue like
Amsterdam
is not a touristic place, we say, because it's a capital city. If I said to some people that were sitting at my table when we were having the expert session, if you're like me, and from the guys in the back, come from Sweden, anything south from Copenhagen is considered touristic if you're in a bad mood. So it's really, really hard. It's really, really hard. Who's going to decide what's what? So since this is so hard, we play it safe. We are not willing to take the risk any longer. So we go with the Frankfurt, the Munich, the Barcelona, the Vienna, the ones that we know is not of any risks.
So Barcelona is not touristic?
It's one of the major cities in Spain, that's fine. But Valencia, nope. Another example
it's very questionable, isn't it?
It's very questionable.
Because Malaga, on the other hand, it's very compliant because you have all the four-star, it's very much into business.
It's the perception of it of being a touristic. And this is the thing that it can be difficult to understand. I'm just going to take a question in a minute. This is the thing that can be hard to understand, is we're talking about perception. We're not talking about the price or the cost or what is actually there. It's about perception. So when my friends, for instance, say to me, "Oh, are you going to Malaga? That's nice." Then I know that's a no-no place to go. Because then in their mindset, Malaga is a nice place to go because it's sun and it's nice food and it's warm and it's... And then I brought the rain. Sorry.
So with regards to choosing your destination then, you know, a destination that is not going to be...
I don't think it's working. It's a thing...
Yeah. A destination that's not going to be perceived as...
Closer again!
As luxurious, if you will. So if I have a meeting where my delegates are coming from Italy, Spain, Portugal, I mean, Southern Europe, yeah? I mean, for us in the north, it's very attractive to come to Southern Europe just in general because you have sun here.
Exactly.
So you'd rather, you know, in the middle of wintertime, probably bring them somewhere where there's sun, regardless of whether you're, sitting in the center of the city, you know, in a hotel, in a four-star hotel, mind you, perhaps, in Malaga, because there's sun. It's not a lavish location whatsoever, but let's say that your delegates are coming from, you know, the southern region, and you've done a flight analysis that actually shows you that, let's say, Malaga as a destination, with the availability at that time when you're looking at having your meeting, has the fewest transfers and has the best flight prices, and by the way, they have better hotel prices as well. Are you saying then that I can't choose Malaga?
I would not go to Malaga. I will go to Madrid. Much safer. Better safe than sorry.
But what if Madrid doesn't have availability?
I would look for Barcelona. I would avoid these things that could be questionable. And I know that, I mean, this is frustrating because it's not that easy to understand. Because it's not, again, it's not about the price. It's not about what's actually here. It's about the perception in people's mindset. That is what it's all about. Could be, I had a long discussion about Dubai the last week. Where, yeah, the touristic boards, how would you like to be perceived? We had a long discussion the other week with Dubai, who's really pushing Dubai as a touristic destination. But it's also a big congress place, and they want to attract more international meetings. This is a clash. But then I think that we also need to accept that pharma, in a minute, cannot go to all destinations. And therefore, there are other people that you can attract than pharma, and that probably needs to be looked after. Some destinations have seen this as a fantastic opportunity, grasped it and run with it. And they're selling like crazy to pharma. You had a question?
Yes. No, I have a comment. I think that we are all frustrated because we're sitting here, the pharma company, we're just as frustrated as the venues are. But as a rule of thumb, if you can end up by somewhere or another on the front of a newspaper, we don't want to go there. If there's a picture of like you were saying with the pigs up here,
exactly.
Eating dinner, if we could have a picture of Novo Nordisk, it might be in a perfectly boring conference center somewhere out in nowhere, but if there's a little bit of sun and there's a picture of an investigator, that can end up twisted a little bit in the front of the newspaper. We don't want to take the chance.
You just do raining destinations?
Very rainy. For those in Sweden, I'm usually saying that Borås is growing as a potential city to go to, because there's nothing more boring than Borås. That's a very Swedish one, Borås. But basically, guys, it's what we're talking about is what we call a red face test. When you suddenly have that TV camera in your face and a microphone, and you have invited 200 doctors to this particular meeting, can you stand the test and stand there and smile and feel confident, I made the right choice? This is nothing that I have to be ashamed of. That's what you need to think about when you're actually picking your destinations. But I know this is very frustrating. Very, very frustrating. The other frustrating bit, I don't know if we have any hotels here, is the five-star hotels. No five-star hotels, no luxury hotels whatsoever. So we are down to four-star, and I can tell you that we are on our way down to three-star hotels, because we're starting to set limits on how much this could cost. One explanation in the code is that we should not spend more money than the doctor would be willing to spend himself. Well, that is an interesting one. How long is a piece of string? If that differs, that's a very personal question, I think. So they are starting to become limits, and I might be the president of IPCA because my company is the toughest on these rules. So we are down to 200 euros a night, including VAT and breakfast. I know that my colleagues are a bit more luxurious, so they're up to 250. But we are in that neighborhood. So we're starting to get a figure now on what we can spend. And in France, that's the law. 230 euros a night, including breakfast and VAT. That's the law. We want to avoid laws. So that's why we start setting these rules, so we don't have laws here. Okay? Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yes.
Sorry, but can you please explain why? I mean, what is it about the five star which makes it simply off limits?
Let's talk about five star for a minute. What was written in the beginning was there was no luxurious places. And the only definition that was around at the time was the star system. So when introduced this no five star hotel, what happened? I have not seen that many stars dropped in a month. That happened when that one came out. Poof. And then you just said, I'm not an idiot, for God's sake. It's what we're looking at is it, what is the perception? Go back to the perception. So I tell my people, if it's a lot of gold and marble, stay out of it. If it is a business Hilton, I don't have a problem with that. But I don't want the sort of, you know, extravaganza. I think we all know what we mean. But that was the definition at the time that was there. And it's not a very good definition, but that's what we're sticking to. And that's where we're at right now. Yes, we have two questions.
Well, just a comment also. We're seeing five-star hotels being pharma approved now. Have you heard about that?
We, on an international level, we try to avoid having these sort of things. But I know on national levels, it's starting to float around. Absolutely. Yes, yes. Where these are sort of safe destinations. We're looking for safe havens. That's what we call them.
If a medical association is organizing a conference and you're a sponsor and they only offer five-star hotels for their delegates, are you not allowed to send
I'm
your
not
people
coming.
There?
Nope, I'm not coming. Let me share with you a little story. Sorry now, Stockholm, because you're going to get it. I'm sorry. European Society of Cardiology is coming to Stockholm this summer. 35,000 delegates was the last time they were in Stockholm. I have managed, because it's so costly, to get up to a limit of 2,500 Swedish kronas, which is 250 approximately euros, pushing and pushing internally to get to that point. I could have brought I bring now one third of what I can bring, because I cannot source the rooms in the right cost level. What is at risk for me, if I would sign up for anything above that, I will have to walk out the door from AstraZeneca. It's not worth it.
Maybe the destination was chosen was wrong.
Yeah, the problem here now is, of course, that when we choose destinations for big congresses, that is done 5 years in advance.
Yeah, but you knew that this would all be that you never have the capacity for this.
It was not 35,000 at the time. It's hard. It's very, very hard. It's very, very hard, these sort of things. And the code is changing. The code is changing as I'm standing here. So what is true right now is not true tomorrow.
Just as a kind of a case study, I suppose, we went to Madrid. We had to do Southern Spain. I've had all of that. And we did all the research. I've worked with pharmaceutical meetings, have done for 9 years, know all the stringents. And everywhere was advertised as 4-star. The brochure, the website. The doctors arrived at the venue. There's 5 stars under the name at the hotel. And we had doctors coming up to us then saying, I'm going to get fined. So it is out. Be careful, because as you're reading something on a website, in a brochure, doesn't mean it's true. So just as a word of warning,
absolutely.
I had that, and it's
absolutely
not a comfortable position
it's
to be in.
It's not comfortable.
No.
The market venues want the business, and they will dump it down, and they won't advertise at the 5-star.
No.
After we have 2 golf courses.
I have a convention centre for 4,000 delegates. I have 1,169 bedrooms, but I have 2 golf courses. Yeah. So I can't get pharma business.
No.
I have a question. I'm from Hong Kong, and in Hong Kong we don't have a star category system. So basically, it's quite mind-boggling, you know, convincing pharma, you know, planners to come, because there's no star category system. The hotel themselves, you know, they can on the website they say a 5-star, 4-star, but actually, under the Hong Kong Hotel Association, there's no star system. It's just category A, category B. And so
do you know what I do? When I do meetings in that area, I ask my local people to go out and check. Yeah. So they had to go do the walking, and then I trust their judgment, because they are the one who actually would get into trouble. So I trust their judgment, actually, in this. The other thing that you need to understand is the no spouses one. It was really hard in the beginning, I can tell you that. It's not a problem any longer. But I don't know how many times that my people have been standing on the airport, and they have been families and dogs and wives and not wives, and God knows what it's been, that you just have to say, sorry, we are not paying for that. So we are only sponsoring the people that are delegates per themselves. And this is one thing that I think pharma is different in, is that because we sponsor delegates, we actually invite doctors to say, do you want to come with me to Munich, I will pay for you your way there, I will pay for your hotel, I will pay your registration. That is how it used to be. We will talk about that in a minute. The limitation on hospitality, just quickly, there are rules on how much you can spend on breakfast, lunches, dinners. I think Germany, you have even rules on when you can have coffee, how much science you have had to listen to before you can have coffee. It's an interesting world, I can tell you that. Usually, a Congress dinner is €60, and that's everything that they put in their mouth. Then we're back to what we call, in my department, the dry Congress chicken that we eat. If you're from Sweden, you don't eat Congress chicken, because you can only spend 300 Swedish kronas. So the Swedish guys are off to McDonald's. So that is the reality. It's really, really tight. You feed them so they stay alive, so they can listen to science. That is it's though the basic criteria. And as you saw, everything has to be signed off. I want to touch upon the American one. And we're running out of time slightly. In America, how many Americans do we have here? Before I say anything, none. All right, keep it in this room. America is, they always go to the extreme with things slightly. So in America, they have a code that regulates all interactions that we do with American physicians, no matter where they are on earth. So if they show up in Sweden, I treat them as American physicians, which means that they cannot have any coffee, they cannot have any gifts. They can hardly walk into your stand. It's really, really tough. In US, they have not been sponsored delegates for years. On the other hand, you all know that we don't see that many Americans outside of US. This is one of the reasons. They have a good system in place in US where they get accreditation for actually going and learning something new, which is good, and that's the driving force to attend meetings. That's good. But they don't spread. They don't go out outside of the US, unfortunately. The no gift one is a fairly new one, which means that if you go to an American exhibition, there are absolutely nothing except for us and our what we're talking about. And what has happened right now is that it's quite empty at the exhibition area in the US, which means, of course, that we start thinking, is it worthwhile to really have an exhibit here? Many of us are actually really considering, should we have it? The other thing that is big in the US that we don't want to see anywhere else is the educational grants. The educational grants is a system whereby we will give money to someone putting up a symposia where we don't have anything to do with the program or development or anything like that. So we are completely out of the loop of what's going on. And in the US, many companies preferably would sponsor something that has nothing to do with the area that they're in, because they don't want to risk to see that any activity would actually generate more prescriptions. Very, very contradictory, very strange thought, but that's the way that we're thinking about it right now in the US. And the trend is to really limit pharma's involvement in any kind and sort of meetings and education. In US, we are the bad guys, and there's a lot of politicians driving this quite strongly to get us out of the whole pharma, just a minute, which is completely different, I just need to add that, in Europe. Because in Europe we have a very good relationship with the European Commission, where the European Commission has actually on their agenda that Europe shall be number one in developing new drugs. And that can only happen in conjunction and together. So the environment is completely different. Yes?
Sorry, just to move back for a minute to the gifts, I just want to ask if you could kindly clarify. I've read in the pharma guidelines from the U.S., because obviously we're global, and as you said, we need to go after the lowest common denominator, that it was specifically regarding marketing events, that you couldn't even give away paper or a pen.
Yep.
And that's really, I think, our focus is we are doing investigator meetings, which is about training, and that is to say that, I mean, we need to be able to give the investigators something to write on to make their notes. I mean, so...
Do you know
according
what we
to
do?
Your guidelines, are you also going into that and saying, well, we can't even give away a pen and a pad of paper anymore? Or?
This is us as an industry. This is we that have actually come up with this. Again, for pharma, it's the American equivalent to IFPMA. And what they have come up to is, what we do when we do our investigative meetings in the US is that we borrow them a pen and we kindly ask them to get it back. But that's how extreme it has gone in the US.
But in Europe, then? What?
Not Europe.
No.
Not Europe.
So
this is only pharma.
No,
this is only US. What I just went through is only US. And I just want you to get a flavor of what's going on in the US, because that's something that we fear that can end up at our end as well. And we don't want that. So science is the focus. I think that's crystal clear by now. Yep. So, patent expiry, and we need to touch upon this. What happens now is, okay, we have patent expiry, we have less income, we have a poor pipeline, what do we need to do? We need to consolidate. And the consolidation that you see going on right now, and you probably read it in the paper, we are sacking people like crazy. We are trying to decrease our staff. We're trying to run our business more effectively. And of course, we are cutting down on budgets. But, here comes the but. Marketing budgets are being decreased. Marketing are the ones that you have dealt with in the past when it comes to meeting. this money is now being shifted over to R&D. So the money is still there, but it's shifted over to R&D. Again, here's the shift. We need to support what we're doing in R&D in our labs. So money's there. What does this really mean? So if you take everything into account, the compliance, the bad reputation, the sort of tougher environment, what does that lead to? Well, we see a clear shift, and I think many of you who's working in this area, you see a shift going from very promotional activities at congresses over to much more scientific focus. So for instance, in booths, we have our investigators in the booth. We're talking about our science. We're talking about our clinical trials. We're having them talking to their peers. Doctors, we have done a couple of surveys. Doctors are indicating that they're not interested to go and see another rep at a congress. They want to speak to someone that can give them a little bit more, a little bit more behind the scenes. And the younger generation doctor, they will go directly to the booth that they want to speak to and ask that specific question that they've been wondering about. They are not interested to the same extent to do quizzes and things like that. They want to walk away with something fruitful. So the shift is definitely coming in that area. Sponsorship items, you usually get a long list. Umbrellas, mugs, cafes, signs, etc., etc., does not fit with the scientific focus. Advertisements, I think, is probably the hardest sell right now because I don't think there's that many that is buying it. So we need together try to identify what are the sponsorship items that can be linked to science that you guys can sell to replace the umbrellas and the bags and things like that. And as I said, advertising, to me, advertising is dead. Yes.
So you say that the cost of marketing is going to R&D. But during the R&D, you spend more money on meetings then? Is that what I hear?
Because what you see now is that a lot of the activities that we're doing at meetings are now being replaced to actually be driven out from our R&D colleagues. And I can tell you, the biggest fight is going in internally because there's no marketeer living today that willingly would give up any square meter whatsoever not to have a chance to talk about his or her own product. So there's a huge debate internally to have this sort of shift. But I see more and more it's the R&D people that's coming in. We're even talking about having... In some congresses, not to talk about that as a promotional area, it's a scientific area as well. So we see shift in language, shift in the way that we're looking at it completely.
But isn't it just another way of marketing? To involve the doctors in an earlier stage?
No, it's not marketing to that extent, because a lot of these things will not talk about actual products. We might be talking about a way of delivering drugs, a hypothesis that we're testing, getting clinical investigating into program. It's not about selling any longer. Because the guys are being visited with all our other marketing activities, and they're fine with that. They're fine with that. But now they want they need to understand the whole scope of what we're all about. So it's just that the platform is going to be used differently. Congresses, and just to reassure you now, the congresses will not disappear. We see shifts going on. There's a lot of things going on, budget cuts, etc. A lot of meetings are dying. I will tell you that straight up front. Big European meetings, big American meetings are surviving. They're attracting more people. Smaller, very focused meetings will continue to live as well. You know, the semi ones that doesn't really have any new thing to talk about, the 14th breast cancer meeting in Europe, they will not survive. They will not survive. We will focus and deliver on the fewer meetings. But on these meetings, remember now, why is congresses at all important for us? It is because that's an opportunity for us to deliver our latest clinical data, to share what we have been doing at our research sites. To actually have that peer-to-peer discussion and reaction, that's why we're going to congresses. That's the focus, that's the core that we should build on. For doctors, you have the guidelines that are coming out from strong associations. You have the peer-to-peer networking. And networking, I've even made it bold because I think that's something that's extremely important that one should build upon and one should expand upon. And that has yet not happened. That's your key strength with face-to-face meetings. And I will share with you in a minute what we do in terms of virtual meetings. But this is important, and that's where you have your strength. I think also that the doctors will become much more picky. There are rules in place in many countries now that they have to pay copay, so they pay 50% themselves, or they can only attend 3 meetings per year, etc. And they will pick much more closely which one they are going to attend. You have been willing to ask for a long time.
I had a different question.
Yeah.
Are we still allowed to persuade you guys to come over? For instance, for fun trips.
Nope. In my company, we have a zero tolerance. So that means that you can probably send me a Christmas card, that's all right. But apart from that, please don't. I've been asked to go to all these different places to come and visit and look for sites. I don't do that anymore. I send an agency.
Can we visit you?
You can visit me. You can have a cup of coffee as well for free if you visit me. So that's all right. Yep. Yeah, if it is sort of an education activity that I pay for, then No. If it is a site visit, then it's fine. Site visits are fine. Site visits should not be followed by any, you know, extravagant dinner with. You can feed me, that's fine, but you cannot sort of have any lavish things going on. Then I have to. Nope.
If I send you,
are you trying to bribe me?
The text on the boxes for it as a destination.
But then that's fine. I mean, sometimes we need to go and look at things. Yeah, sometimes we need to go and look at things. Of course, it shouldn't be silly to that extent. Okay, I think we're just going to skip this one. CME, is that something that you guys are familiar with? We have run over the time now. Continuous medical education. Go home and read about it. That's my. I'm just going to talk about quickly the future, because this is also important. And then I'm going to let you go. Compliance, you understood that. Procurement, someone else spoke about this morning. Procurement is involved in every decision that we make. And we have preferred suppliers nowadays. So we have maybe a handful of suppliers that we work with, and that's the suppliers that we work with. End of discussion. Budget restrictions, yes, it's tighter. And in addition to that, I have to make business case for every single case if I'm going to ask for money to go for a Congress. There is no such thing as I would just automatically go to a Congress any longer. I have to prove why this supports what I intend to do. Our budget process takes much longer than it used to do in the past. I shared this morning with some of you guys that I finished my budget process and started a commitment for meeting 2010 in October. Okay? That means that if you are running an event in 3 years' time, you will not get any commitments probably before 12 months before the actual meeting. In the past, we could promise 2-3 years in advance. And this is actually really coming into play now, 2010, and it's not very pleasant. Virtual meetings, just quickly. Virtual meetings is here to stay. It's big in pharma. It is a fantastic tool for us because disseminating data, virtual meeting is amazingly good. I can target my customer group directly. I know exactly what message I'm sending to this particular audience. It is cost effective, and I can follow what's going on. So I'm just going to say that because that means that you guys have to think, what does the face-to-face meeting add to this? They do have a place, but virtual meeting is good. All right, guys. I think that you have had a lot of information, lots of thoughts. Do you have any more questions? No, you're too complete. Oh, here's one.
So do you see, I mean, if we were to look at the trend moving forward in terms of, I mean, they're tightening regulations now. We do global meetings in our clinical research organization. Are other companies really moving these out and decentralizing these into, you know, their affiliate organizations and holding them locally because the...
For the clinical meetings? I see a huge different variations here, but I also see the virtual meetings coming in strongly on clinical meetings. Startup meetings are fantastic to do virtually. Fantastic. You have absolutely control over that. Every individual understands your protocol. It's good. It's really, really good. But then there you have variation. You can see some companies centralizing it quite a lot. Other ones are regionalizing it, and some are actually putting it out locally. So there's a lot of different variations going on.
And last question, with regards to flight tickets, what are your specific rules,
flight
interpretation
tickets?
On those?
Guess flight tickets? Economy, yes, all the way in the back. Absolutely, absolutely. It's, sorry? No, we actually, no, not yet. Not yet. Not yet. I haven't thought about that one, but maybe that's a good one.
And is that economy class regardless of how long the flight is?
All righty, quick one. Oh, yeah. Will investigator meetings continue? Absolutely. I think that investigator meetings, you know, what happens when people meet and the peer-to-peer discussion about, I mean, is this a theory that works? Is this something, I mean, that is really important to have face-to-face. But when it comes down to going through protocol and things like that, there's a very sort of this is the way you're doing it, lends itself very well to virtual.
You were listed before networking and motivation. What kind of motivation? Because till now, all words of motivation could be confused with
When you ask doctors why they go to congresses, motivational factor is one, and that is to learn something new, to also get this sort of recognition that, yes, I'm doing the right thing. That is a motivator for these people. The motivator is not having a lavish dinner or getting champagne or things like that. So it's a different kind of motivation.
About the five-star hotel, don't you think it would be a criteria to choose hotels by the real luxury facilities rather than the star, because they are five-star, which are basically conference hotels and not a deluxe hotel?
Absolutely. I think that the five-star is not a good system, and I completely agree with that. IFPMA also agrees with that. That was not their intention to blow out all the five-star, but they wanted to ensure that we were not staying at luxury hotels. And since there were no other way of interpreting it, this is the way that it has been interpreted. So if you look at the IFPMA, it says luxury. Okay. This, guys, I'm going to leave you with this, that this will actually mean that there's going to be a lot of pressure on you guys. A lot of pressure. And the best way of understanding the way forward and how to adapt to change is to continuously talk to people like me. Not necessarily me all the time, but to the industry. And keep that discussion up and going. So if you have any sort of questions or anything like that, go into the IPCA website. Through that, you can post your questions, and people will get back to you that is working in your particular area. So use that. Thank you very, very much for intensive debate. Thank you.